I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hello, dear listeners, and welcome to another episode of Everyone is Hot, the podcast that talks about your favorite stealth sex symbols and the film that turned you on to them. I'm Shelley Brooks, and I am flying solo this week. Michael is out of town, so it's just going to be your bud, Shelley. But it's exciting. We're going to have fun because we do have an amazing guest. Oh, I'm very, very, very excited to introduce this person. This is a journalist, a programmer, a producer, and a host, Hafa Salas Ross.
Welcome, Hafa. Oh, this is so nice. You know, you hear other people getting introduced and you're like, wow, this is incredible. And then it happens to you. Wow, dreams do come true. This is wonderful. Thanks for having
me. This is what we're here for, to make dreams come true. And Hafa is coming to us from one of the furthest locations that we've had, all the way from Aberdeen in Scotland.
Yeah, I come from the land of sheep farms and butteries and scones and tons of berries. I'm in Scotland.
It's a lovely place. I haven't been since I was a teenager. I did go to Edinburgh as a teen for the Fringe. And my highlight, I think, of the trip was we went to the countryside and met Hamish the Highland Coo, which was a real treat. And apparently he had his like own theme song, because we would like go pet him and be like, Hamish the Highland Coo. So I have very fond memories of Scotland. So what time is it for you there?
It is 3 p.m., so mid-afternoon. All what right, time is it yeah. there?
10 a.m. over here. So yeah, oh my gosh, we're traveling across time to have this conversation. It's lovely.
Well, it's been fine in the 5 hours I'm ahead.
Yeah.
Nothing major has happened since.
Well, so you have a really great crush this week. I am very excited about this one. We're going to be talking about a movie that I hadn't seen since I was a teenager. It's going to be lots of teen talk, it seems, in this episode. So, Hafa, tell us, who is your stealth sex symbol this week, and what movie are we going to be talking about?
My sex symbol is the one and only Emma Thompson, Dame Emma Thompson, in Stranger Than Fiction, which is a film that I love dearly. And I do think it fits the podcast very nicely because everyone is hot in that film.
It's so true.
I think that's true.
No, it's so true. So this is from 2006, directed by Mark Forster. So I rewatched it for the first time in, God, years for the podcast the other day. I was watching with my uncle, and every time a new actor came on, we're like, oh my God, this person's in it too? Wait, this person's in it too? Just like a string of like, you know, great actor hotties. Are there other people in the cast that like really do it for you as well?
Maggie Gyllenhaal, but that would be 100% cheating because I don't think there's a person in the world who does not think that Maggie Gyllenhaal is hot. And as an anarchist baker, this like
the tattoos. Oh,
I know the bandana. She smells a flower. This is like ticking all of the boxes for me. And I think Will Ferrell is hot in that film. I think Queen Latifah is hot in that film. Dustin Hoffman is hot in that film. Dustin Hoffman is hot always as well, but it's a very hot film.
Very, very hot film. Well, before we get into the main conversation, we do like to give a little synopsis in case any of the listeners aren't familiar with the plot of the movie. So this is the plot of Stranger Than Fiction from 2006 by Mark Forster. Harold Crick is your average IRS agent. Monotonous, boring, and repetitive. But one day, this all changes when Harold begins to hear an author inside of his head narrating his life. But when the narration reveals that he is going to die, Harold must find the author of the story, and ultimately, his life, to convince her to change the ending of the story before it's too late.
How was that?
Oh my God. This is doing it for me. This is kind of dangerous.
Yes.
It's triggering the cigarette. Oh man. This is dangerous here. I could hear her almost. This is great.
God, yeah, her voice has been in my head for days ever since I rewatched the movie. Oh, and I can't stop thinking about her and her little cigarettes and spitting into her little tissues. Ugh.
You know what? I hate smokers. I hate smoking in general, but that is just so hot. No, what can you say?
Oh, it's perfect. Well, speaking of it being so hot, before we get into our main talk, we like to loosen up a little bit. We like to get a little slick. And we do that with something called the Sexy Trivia Game. Rafa, would you like to start us off with letter A?
This is terrifying. Please, listeners, please be nice to me. I don't think I have a sexy voice.
You're sexy already, honey. All right, let's do it.
While filming, Will Ferrell wore an earpiece that fed him Dame Emma Thompson's narrative lines in order to assist the other cast members in reacting more naturally to Ferrell's seemingly non sequitur lines.
Ooh, that was hot, baby. Pulled it off.
Oh, non sequitur.
I love non sequiturs. Ooh, Emma Thompson in your ear? Don't mind if I do. Number B. Dame Emma Thompson wore no makeup in this movie.
Not needed, baby.
She didn't need a stitch.
All natural.
And just how we like her, barefaced and maybe someday bare-assed. Papa, you want to give us number C?
The movie's cast include three Oscar winners, Dustin Hoffman, Emma Thompson, and Linda Hunt. It includes three additional Oscar nominees. The one and only Maggie Gyllenhaal. Hot. Brother, hot. Family, hot. Queen Latifah and Tom Hussey. Hoche, Duce, I don't know how to pronounce his last name.
Il Duce.
Il Duce, Tom Hoche.
And on that note, that was the Sexy Trivia Game. I think Tom Hulse, because he's the guy from Amadeus.
You know what? I have never had to pronounce his name out loud in my entire life.
I only know because I went through a period where I had a big crush on him after I saw Amadeus.
Oh, man, he has such a sad life story. I almost feel bad for reading his name inappropriately in a sexy voice.
Wait, what happened in his life? Yeah. I just know the movies.
Well, the thing is, I think the last time I heard about him, it was with a Guardian article talking about his sad life. Am I wrong? Oh, no. Does he have a great life? I'm going to Google Tom Hooch's sad life. And oh, I'm God. Going to see.
I hope well, Tom Hooch had a good life.
There are quite a few articles saying that it's being sad. Yeah. Oh,
damn.
Oh, man.
I hate to hear that. I hate when bad things happen to hot people.
I know. This is terrible. Only hot people matter, really. Exactly. Things happen to regular people. I'm not a fuss.
Yeah, exactly. Tragedy can befall me. That's fine. But leave the hotties alone, please.
Exactly. Being born with my face was already a tragedy. But can you imagine having everything in your life and something sad happens? It's a shift. I was born prepared.
Exactly. We know what's up. Margot Robbie, please. What's she going to do if something bad happens?
I cannot imagine.
I will say for Tom Hulce, there is a movie when I was going through his filmography that I watched with him and Ray Liotta where the line in Tropic Thunder where they say never go the full R word comes to mind because he goes for it in a way that is quite uncomfortable to watch. Not
is that
as we do today.
That's Dominic and Eugene, right? I am going to get crucified for this, but for a long time in my life, I hated Ray Liotta. Ooh. I thought he was like the biggest phony of all time, but it turned out I was just dumb and stupid and did not know better. And I went through like a massive Ray Liotta watch I'm like, you know what? Something needs to change for me. And do I love him dearly? Mm-hmm. No, but I appreciate what he does. And he's pretty hot in that weird little film. So.
Ooh, yeah, he's pretty. I mean, I love an acne scar. So, you know, a guy who's a little pockmarked, it really does it for me. So Ray Liotta's good in my books.
That is nice. It shows they lived. This is a hot person who has gone through some form of hardship.
There is terrain. Yes. Oh, but we're not here talking about Ray Liotta. Yes, a geographic face. Oh, that's a great way to put it. I love that. Well, speaking of geographic faces, not to the extent of Ray Liotta, but Emma Thompson's face in this movie, she's got a face.
Oh, man. It's just everything here that involves Emma Thompson and Emma Thompson's character just works for me. A writer, that's number one. Disheveled, that's number two. Slightly depressed, number three. Gorgeous hair, just like everywhere. She hasn't really brushed that in 6 days, probably. I don't know last time she showered. I doubt that she thought about what she was wearing when she went outside. I think that's just so confident. And she's struggling. She has writer's block, and I think that makes her approachable, you know, a human being. So,
She's interesting as a figure in this movie because she feels like you don't see many female characters quite like this. You see a lot of male characters of the sort of like singularly focused artist, disheveled, kind of gross, you know, smoking and spitting into her tissues and, you know, looking... You know, she looks beautiful in the movie, but she looks quite unglamorous. And so it's really exciting to see a woman doing this kind of role.
Yeah, and I think it's also interesting to have a film in which she's an alter who has a brilliant career and who is considered a genius and whose work is studied by men in universities and not just a chick flick writer, which, no judgment, I love my chick flicks or my chick... chick lit books. But I feel like there's a lot of movies when a successful female writer either writes erotic fiction, which, good for you, or chick lit, which also good for you. But it's very rare to see a woman who a professor at a university stops and says, this is going to be the greatest work of American literature of the century. And I think that's really
exciting.
So good
that you should die for it.
I know. And I was like, just get over with Will Ferrell already, you know? But it's fine. It's okay. Like, women keep sacrificing their success.
Exactly. Honestly, Will Ferrell, misogynist for not dying in this movie.
100%. 100%. This is anti-feminist. Yes. That film does not pass the Bechdel test. I don't know if
Ferrell
that's true.
Do
not quote me. Hashtag canceled. Cross the picket line. You just heard it here. No, I'm just kidding.
I actually think that this movie does pass the Bechdel test because there are so many great conversations between Queen Latifah and Emma Thompson that are only solely about her work.
Yeah, but they do involve a male character.
This is true, but I'm thinking about, like, them sitting out in the rain when they're, like, imagining car crashes or when they go to the hospital. Like, it's more sort of, like, abstract about, like, the work of the writer rather than, yeah, than this book's in specific. Yeah, that's funny. I hadn't thought about it in that way, but that's very refreshing. And I,
it's bringing in the feminist movies.
Seriously, thank you so much. Me. It's about time.
I know, like, people call me Simone de Beauvoir.
Well, you say that. I mean, it is interesting because, you know, I was saying it was rare to kind of see a character like Emma Thompson's in a movie. But I mean, you read about the lives of so many female writers and they are a lot like her. Like, you know what? We're going to play a little game later on. So someone I included is that we're going to talk about is Marguerite Duras, who is like one of my favorite writers. And I mean, she feels very similar. I mean, she's getting drunk all day, smoking endless cigarettes and just kind of like all askew. So yeah, like it does feel very real to life, but it's interesting that that sort of real to life phenomenon isn't something that is seen that frequently on screen.
Yeah, and this film is going to be 20 years old pretty soon, and I don't think after that there have been many other films that have approached that type of character. I've been trying to wrangle my mind a little bit, but yeah, I can't think of many really.
Yeah. Well, so speaking of it turning 20 soon, which is horrifying because the fact that I remember seeing it as a teenager and then that's almost 20 years away is deeply upsetting to me. But do you remember when you first saw this movie?
Yeah. So I went, as every hot girl does in a point in her life, through a long Charlie Kaufman phase.
Yep.
So I was obsessed with Charlie Kaufman. Everything in my life was like, wow, Charlie Kaufman, he's doing it like no one else. This man is a genius. And I watched Adaptation. And I loved that film. I thought it was incredible. I also went through a bit of a Spike Jonze phase in my life.
Yeah.
And
they go hand
after
in hand.
That. Yeah, yeah, it's nice. And I just thought I wanted to watch some more films that kind of approached existentialism through writers and fiction and playing with fiction and nonfiction and the idea of diegesis and outer diegesis. And this is how I stumbled on Stranger Than Fiction. And I like it more than I do Adaptation now. And it's a film that I rewatch quite often. Yeah, I just think it's just so earnest while being so clever. That first watch, I was just smitten when Will Ferrell shows up to Maggie Gyllenhaal and he says, "I brought you flowers." I still get the I still get the chills. I think that's one of the greatest romantic lines of modern cinema. Sweet. And I'm usually really hyperbolic, but I'm 100% serious here. You know, I think that's a great line. I think that's a great film. I think the message at the end is just lovely. Just a lovely film.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring up the sort of earnestness of it in comparison to Charlie Kaufman. So we did watch Being John Malkovich for the show a few months ago. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't seen it for a few years. And something that was very striking to me is that, you know, I remembered the cleverness of the structure, but I forgot how just kind of deeply sad it is and how heartbreaking it is. And I do think that there is a sort of darkness and maybe a sort of nihilism to Kaufman that, yeah, is like just not present at all in this movie. This movie is so sort of hopeful, which I think Emma Thompson then makes an interesting counterpoint in it because she feels so kind of, there's a little sort of like early 2000s kind of like poppy borderline twee earnestness in it. And she feels like such a great anchor to it because her performance feels so grounded.
Yeah, and it's not a film that is constantly preaching the idea of a happy ending as the only ending. And I think as someone who's very drawn to nihilistic films in general, I can still find that here. And the rhythms at the beginning and the idea of him counting his teeth brushing and his steps and his life being just measured in that way. And then you're thinking of this idea of measuring everything you do, and then that parallel with writing when you're literally measuring every single part of your narrative and trying to understand where you're going to find a pacing and a rhythm. There's so much to this film that if we weren't here to be slightly hornier, I would probably speak on for like 3 hours. Because I think it's great. And I find it kind of heartbreaking when people dismiss really clever, interesting existential films because they do lean into earnestness. I think it's lovely when a film is able to manage that. And it's really hard to do.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, it's such a tricky balance. So when you first saw the film, were you immediately drawn to Emma Thompson?
You know what? My first watch was all about Maggie Gyllenhaal because it's very hard not to be. And you're just thinking of her a lot. And then I rewatched this film fairly often. I'll see maybe every couple of years. It would just be on Netflix and I would just watch it. And as I grew older, I'm like, you know what? F baking. I don't want people who bake and who are anarchists. Anarchy is a lie. No one can be an anarchist. This woman needs to pay her taxes. Like, this is too much stress. Do not bang your RS, man. No. And then as I grew older and grumpier, I'm like, you know what? You know who is the person for me? She was there all along. The one and only. Elle Thompson. And it's just, I just fell in love with her on rewatches and all her little mannerisms and the things that I feel we take for granted a lot of times when we see her on screen. And she's just so good here. She has relatively little screen time when you think about it, for her to be a main character, but her voice so sexy. I'm like, oh, if this person was telling me I was gonna die, I can't be into it, you know? I don't think I'd be that sad.
The only reason I don't want to die is because I want to keep listening to you, baby.
I know. Usher me into heaven. I think that would be nice.
Yeah. Her voice is incredible. And yeah, it is interesting, like, because as you say, she doesn't have as much screen time as, you know, say Will Ferrell, but the voice is ever present, and it does really make you appreciate her as an actor, that her expressive abilities, that it's not just, I mean, so many actors are so reliant, especially movie actors, I think, are so much more reliant on their physical presence, and especially on the face, that the voice can sometimes be neglected a bit. So it's really interesting to hear just the sheer, like, flexibility and musicality of her voice.
Yeah, and we were talking about Spike Jonze earlier, and it's just that idea of Scarlett Johansson in your ear. Mm. Or just think of someone who has an iconic voice like Morgan Freeman, that you don't need to see them on screen. You don't need to have their image attached. The moment they hear their voice, it is immediately there. And once again, there are not many actors that I can think of that have that sort of a presence, like Willem Dafoe. That is just there. And with Emma Thompson, it very much is. You can hear her narrating. And she does that for some other films, and especially when she goes a bit more fantastical, and she's like Nanny McPhee. And it's just, it's so good because it doesn't become a repetitive device. It doesn't become a nagging device because she's just so good in that voice performance.
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting seeing her in the scenes with Dustin Hoffman, who plays the professor in the film, because, I mean, obviously these are two of our, like, you know, greatest film actors, and, you know, Dustin Hoffman is incredible. But you do really see, I think, the difference, or more appropriately, hear the difference in sort of, like, British actors and American actors. And obviously it's, like, tailored to the roles that they're playing as well. But, you know, Dustin Hoffman's doing his vocal Dustin Hoffman thing of being like, oh, so why you come here? Oh, so you think you're the one? Okay. And then she's got this, like, plummy English, like, Harold Craig was... So it's funny seeing those, or hearing those different, like, national styles kind of, like, side by side.
Yeah, I am a sucker for enunciation. I think it's just beautiful. I am Brazilian, and my home language is Portuguese. Mm-hmm. And Portuguese is a language that can only work through vowels. You can only make sounds through vowels. So it's very open in ahs and ohs. And I remember when I first started learning English, and I used to watch a lot of American TV shows and Friends, and then you start watching films, and I struggled a lot to find a distinction in the sounds. And then when I started watching British shows and in British films, I'm like, I can kind of see how this works. And I was very attracted to that. because I could understand, which is a vital, like, it's a key piece of seduction to be able to understand what people are saying.
It helps.
It does help. Hmm. It is nice. Well,
it's interesting. So, I mean, you live in Scotland, which, I mean, even for some English speakers, some Scottish accents can feel a bit impenetrable. So, I mean, growing up learning English off of these British shows where oftentimes people have more sort of like standard British accents. Have you found like as you've been living in the UK that it's that you have a hard time navigating some accents there just because there's so many?
Not really. It's really funny because people tend to think that I would struggle, especially with the Northern accent here in Aberdeen, because they have a dialect called Doric. But I don't find that bad. I find that I can understand what people say quite easily. I struggle more with Americans, like from LA, when they're slurring and everything's like
at all. It's just like
exactly. I find this so hard because once I don't want to offend anyone. I'm so sorry,
but you know what they sound like. Come on.
Oh, I know, but it's so monotone. Then I don't really get. Sometimes here I get out of context and people make such a fuss. Scottish people are quite similar to Brazilian people in a way that they're very loud and they speak with their body and you can kind of get that. So I find that easier than certain American accents, surprisingly enough. But I find it hard to distinguish them. Like I will never know if I hear someone, I'm like, he's from Bolton. No, but I can usually understand.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, there's so much of like a homogenization of a lot of American accents, at least in the last like maybe 50 years or so, that it's always like a surprise and like a fun, like exciting thing when you hear like a Philadelphia accent in the wild and you're like, they still have it. Or like a Baltimore accent. You're like, oh, look at that.
Well, where are you from?
I'm from Georgia originally, but I've lived in New York for like all of my adult life, basically. So I've very much become familiarized with the Northeast accent variations. But they're always a treat.
That's the thing. For me, New York's like Friend Drescher or
yeah.
any Scorsese movies.
Right.
They're all kind of half Italian.
Right.
But I do like New York accents. They are nice.
Oh, yeah, they're great. So, I mean, everybody loves them. And that's why like Ryan Gosling did a fake one for like 15 years before he started speaking with his real voice.
Good for him.
Yeah. It's like, I know you're a Mormon from Canada. You cut it out.
With that face, and he's making an effort. With that face, he could be speaking like complete gibberish in any film that he's in. And I'm like, give that man the Oscar.
Yeah, give it to him. Beautiful performance.
Gorgeous.
Oh. Well, so going back to Emma Thompson, I mean, I was really amazed watching it because sometimes I think because she's so recognizably herself in every film, I forget just what range she has. Because, I mean, like, a character like this is so different from, you know, Sense and Sensibility, which is so different from, you know, you mentioned Nanny McPhee. It's so different from Much Ado About Nothing. So are you familiar with much of her career? And are there other performances of hers that you find particularly interesting?
Yeah, so I am always quite happy whenever she shows up in a film. I think she has such a wonderful screen presence. And I think that over the past few years, she has taken quite a lot of roles. And I think people, myself including, started taking her for granted a little bit, that she's just going to be there and show up in random English films. But I love her in quite a few. Well, Sense and Sensibility is probably the first memory I have of Emma Thompson. And I love when she goes a bit gloomy. I think people are quite harsh on a film like Love Actually, for example, where I think she's absolutely great. And
best part.
I know, she's incredible. And then sometimes she shows up for a little bit like in an Education and it's just so wonderful. And most recently, I think she did a movie. I don't know if you saw this last year, called Good Luck to You, Leo Grand.
I haven't seen it, but it looks fantastic.
Oh, man, that film is so good. That film is, she has a role that an actress has to take at a certain point of their career when there's just so much confidence and so much know-how to be able to take on a role like that and to make it more than what it is in the page. And she's just wonderful. She's so charming, and that we've been saying, the ability to navigate comedy and drama and illusion and delusion and nihilism and ecstasy all at once in a two-hander of a film that has a very simple premise and delivers such strong performances. And she's wonderful. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I remember Emma Thompson in just being a bit headstruck. I think Sense and Sensibility, is it Howard's End, maybe?
Oh, she's fantastic in that.
Yeah, that is a film that it took me a little while to watch, surprisingly enough. But that is a great film and she's great in it. I don't think she's ever terrible. I think people who say Emma Thompson can be terrible are joyless. Yes. They don't know what they're talking about.
I've never seen her be bad in a single thing. And I think it's interesting in this film that I think oftentimes when actors, I don't want to make sweeping statements about actors, but not all of them are particularly bright. So sometimes it seems a bit out of place when they play someone who's supposed to be very self-consciously intellectual. Like oftentimes you'll see an actor playing a, you know, a writer or a professor and you'll be like, nah, I don't quite believe it. But, you know, she, I think because she leads with such intelligence as an actor, like I fully believe her as, you know, a genius writer.
Yeah. And she is a genius writer because she is a writer. Yeah. And I think
Oscar winning writer. Had,
exactly. Just a Dame Emma Thompson, the one and only, with that gorgeous husband of hers that they've been together for like 25 years.
Yes, after that snake cheated on her.
Do not say his name here. This is a safe space and we will not say his name here.
Yeah, no. Google it if you don't know, but we will not dirty this.
Google it this Zoom on call. Incognito. So yes. His numbers don't go up. Yes. Don't want that. No. We stand with Emma Thompson here.
Yes.
That whole love triangle is just one of the weirdest little tidbits of British pop's history.
Oh God, it's so juicy.
Oh God, there was a moment when I was a bit obsessed with British tabloid pop history.
Oh,
yeah,
gosh.
That's bad. We have been there. I am recovering. Yes. It is a journey, but I'll get there and it'll be okay. Did I relapse last year and read Prince Harry's autobiography? Perhaps.
Oh, with his frostbitten penis.
Oh my God. And I listened to the audiobook. So he was telling me that story my ear.
In that his like weird husky voice.
Something shifted for me that day when I became kind of like, maybe I don't want to have any intimate relationships with anyone else in my life. That part of my life is over. Yes. It's gone.
I had a good
I'm
run.
I'm not celibate. Yeah, it's fine.
This image will be
again.
In my mind.
I know. But no, you're absolutely correct. I don't know why I brought Prince Harry into this conversation, because you are correct. Emma Thompson does have a delicious intellectual aura, and she can, and so does Dustin Hoffman. Like to go back into it, I kind of wish we got a bit of a spin-off and just get 45 minutes of him interviewing her for his book.
Right.
That'd be great.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, no, that is such a cool relationship in the film, that his fixation with her work. Because, again, like you said, to see this like male academic with this particular interest in this woman writer, because it does sometimes feel like in academia, the women can become, and not always, obviously there are outliers, but sometimes women's writing can become sort of siloed, and that, you know, it's probably partially just the vagaries of, you know, academia as like a, you know, quote unquote industry. That, you know, you have to sort of have like a take on someone. So, I mean, oftentimes I think that women writers end up getting put in this like feminist box, even if their work isn't like particularly feminist. But it has to be like read through that lens. But yeah, so it's exciting to see that sort of like relationship of his like obsession with her and her work.
I just love when she shows up for the first time within their world on TV in his office.
Yeah.
And he kind of has this throwaway line that is just so good. And he goes to Will Ferrell and he's like, well, she wasn't on my list because I thought you would have mentioned that she's British.
Yeah.
Like, you have never mentioned this. Yeah. And it's just so good. It's this little snippet of him. He's looking down. He's like, well, she's obviously not on my list because I thought he would have mentioned that she's British.
Right.
And that random, that for me is the weirdest little plot line in that film, because for him to be rewatching that interview,
right?
Like, how obsessed is this man with this woman.
I was like, is he prepping for a course or something? Like, is he getting his materials in order for a class, maybe?
Yeah, because over the years when I rewatched it, I went through different phases when I'm like, maybe he just has things playing on the background all the time and he has some cassettes and it's just serendipity. Or maybe he's a complete freak and he's completely obsessed with this woman. Right. And if he ever gets to meet her, bad things will happen.
Right.
But yeah, you do get a lot from a little snippet of that film.
That's funny that you say that, because that is another thing that I really like about that relationship in the film, is that like it does set you up with the possibility, I think, especially as like a woman viewer, that you might think like, oh God, like if she meets him, is it going to be that like he's in love with her or something? And it's lovely that like, not at all. He doesn't really particularly care about her personal life. He just cares about her work. And that's very gratifying.
I know. And he's able to give her such honest feedback right away, which is also really lovely when she comes back and she trusts him almost immediately. It's like, look, this is my book, read it. And it's not a shame, but you kind of get a bit hungry thinking, wow, why is this only happening in the third act? I wish I had a little bit more of that back and forth, but that's what you get.
Yeah, and it's very gratifying when it does come, like, you know, because you felt like it's been building to it this whole time. But so other than Emma Thompson, I mean, do you remember the first like movie crush that you had?
Oh man, you know what? I did, like many other people who have come on this podcast, especially women, I have gone through a phase of white twinks. And I remember, like, what can I say? Like, when we are 13 and 14, we're very susceptible to bad taste. And I was just, I was a bit in love with Zac Efron from High School Musical.
Yeah.
I was absolutely obsessed with him. And then Robert Pattinson and Twilight, quite obviously.
Oh my gosh.
But I think the first time I felt something kind of physical, you know, and I'm like, oh my God, this person's just unreal. I think it was Rebecca Rumjean in Femme Fatale, the Brian Palmer film.
There's
a scene in that. Have you watched that film?
I haven't seen that one yet. I've been working through De Palma because I was kind of like tried to stay away from De Palma for a few years. And then recently I've like, now I'm obsessed. But I used to be like, this misogynist.
Oh.
And now I'm like, ooh, this misogynist. I love him.
Oh, man. Yeah. Misogyny aside, that film played once late on Brazilian television and I was young and I was watching it, and there's this scene when it's the Cannes Film Festival of all places and there's this Rebecca Romijn is a criminal, obviously, and she's trying to steal this very elaborate kind of like bra corset that's filled with diamonds and this hot as hell woman who's wearing it. So she takes her to the bathroom and she seduces her. It's like, starts undressing her, and then she takes the diamonds out. I was like, oh my God, this is so hot. I was in my room, I was all by myself in the living room. It was probably too late, I shouldn't be watching TV.
I'm
looking around, going like, oh my God, is someone watching me because I'm getting confused here. I don't want to share this moment with anyone else.
Do you remember how old you were when this happened?
Oh man, maybe 12, 13.
Oh, that's perfect.
Maybe that.
Perfect turning age where you're suddenly like, huh.
Oh, man. That was just, I think that was my first time where, you know, you just don't want anyone to walk in, even though you're not doing anything. And you're like, no one can walk in.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't do anything. I'm fine.
I am so sorry. I know. And you're so tense. You're like, I shouldn't be watching this.
Right. It's all in your head, but like your head is like feeling so horny that you're just like, if anyone saw me, they would know.
They would. No, they can smell it. They can smell the pheromones. Something has changed.
Exactly. The air is different now.
I know. I feel like when I revisit that memory, there's almost like Lizzie McGuire, the little drawing cartoon on my shoulder going like, and now you are a woman. Like, oh my God, thank you, tiny Lizzie McGuire. But yeah.
That's perfect. Oh my gosh. Well, so these are all very different types. Like, she and Emma Thompson and Zac Efron and Robert Pattinson, these are all extremely different actors. So do you think that, like, it either in your viewing crushes or like in your personal life, would you say you have any sort of like type, or is it just, are you kind of omnivorous?
Oh man, this, once again, I think it might have been a mistake for me to come here on this podcast today because no, but I tell my friends all the time that I am intellectually and emotionally and spiritually horny. It's not just a physical state for me. For me, yes. It's a state of being. It's almost nirvana. I can be horny about almost anyone as long as they haven't committed some serious war crimes or aren't a legitimately terrible person. Yeah, exactly. Like, unless they're a dictator, it would be really hard for me not to find something hot in basically everyone. So I don't have a type. I remember when you asked me to submit a list of people I thought hot, it just took me 8 days because I think everyone's hot.
Yeah.
But
title of the show.
I know. Ta-da! But I do. I find that a lot of the times in a movie it's just about someone who's a bit geeky or someone who's funny. I love funny guys and girls and everyone who's funny and confident and comfortable and I just, I'm drawn to that. And then Alfred Molina, who's in his own category.
Oh, my God. Okay, what's your number one Alfred Molina? Oh, God, I love that you said Alfred Molina.
I love Alfred Molina. I have like 6 Alfred Molina t-shirts.
Oh, my God.
One of my options for this today was like Alfred Molina. I think he's hot in everything. I think he's hot in Spider-Man. I think he's hot in everything.
You are really a woman after my own heart. Everything you're saying, like, this is really great for me.
What is that man? Just so incredible. When he gave that interview, I think I don't remember who for. Maybe it was a Guardian, and he said, "I would do anything. I'm a little bit of a slut that way." I live by that.
Yeah,
that is wonderful. When he said the word slut, once again, something shifted within me.
Yes.
So yeah, my type is everyone and Alfred Molina.
God, I love that. Yeah, a man calling himself a slut—that really gives me a little, like, a little, you know. Flick to
tingles.
The bean, you know? Yeah, it's so hot. Oh, God. And I feel like he's got, there's a certain sort of British insouciance that I feel like you can pull off saying, like, hey, I'm a slut for doing this, you know? I feel like American men can't do it as well.
And he has that thing when he's British, but he's not fully British.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a bit of mystique, you know? A little bit of a,
yeah.
I don't know how to describe, but. Yeah, and I'm Latina, so a lot of Latin figures were very sexually formative for me.
Yeah.
But that was telenovelas, which I watched a lot, and none of my Scottish friends or British friends really do know who these people are.
Yeah.
But I think if you are on television or if you are in a movie, 90% of the time is because you have something that makes other people want to watch you. So it's very easy for me to find everyone beautiful.
That's so real. Oh my gosh. Well, so this is, you said this is one of your favorite films. And you mentioned some things that are, you know, somewhat similar, like the Charlie Kaufman movies, the Spike Jonze movies. If you were to recommend this movie, or if you were to recommend another movie to someone who loved this movie, or to plan a double feature of this, of Stranger Than Fiction with something else, what would that other movie be for you?
Well, adaptation is one, and it's funny that you said John Malkovich, because Being John Malkovich is another one that I recommend. Mm. And Truman Show, surprisingly enough, I think would be an interesting companion to this idea of someone living a parallel reality where they're the main character and they don't know.
That's a great one.
I think that would be a really interesting double bill.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, I think for me, as I was trying to think about it, I just recently saw Asteroid City, the new Wes Anderson film. And I think that these would actually make a really good pairing, because I think something that I find really lovely in Stranger Than Fiction is that he's both existing as a fictional character, but also as a real person. So he's a constructed work of fiction in many ways, but that doesn't make his experiences any less real. And that's something that I found really moving in Asteroid City is the fact that if anyone hasn't seen it, the way it's structured, it's like there are three layers to it, basically. It's like you're watching a TV show that's about a play that was being written in the mid-century. Then you see the plot of the play as like the sort of main like color sequence of the film. So as we're watching the main sequence, like we know that it's fiction, we know that it's part of a play, but it doesn't lessen the emotional impact of it. And there's a beautiful scene. If you don't want spoilers for Asteroid City, skip ahead 30 seconds. But there's a beautiful scene with Margot Robbie where, you know, there's this conversation. She plays an actress who didn't get a role in the play, and she's talking to Jason Schwartzman, who's one of the actors in the play. And they sort of like recount the scene that they read in the audition. And for like this brief little moment, it becomes, even though she's not even in the play itself, but this imagined scenario that they share becomes so real. And yeah, I started like bawling in the theater when that happened. And it was like, yeah, I felt like the same kind of like emotional tug with Stranger Than Fiction, that it had that kind of interesting thing of like, you know, created works are in their own ways real, you know?
Yeah, that's beautiful. I think this idea of a simulacrum and diora, and not to get too Walter Benjamin about it, but, yeah. But the idea of what is constructed and what isn't is really interesting. And when explored cinematically, it's very fertile ground.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so we're running low on time, but we do like to play a little game before we let people go. So it's different every week, but this one I gave you a real challenge. It's we're going to be playing Fuck, Marry, Kill, but we each had to choose three authors, and then we will for our own authors that we chose, we'll do a Fuck, Marry, Kill for them. So Rafa, do you want to start out with yours?
All right, this was really hard because for all the horniness that is within me when I watch things, it's not that existent when I read things, surprisingly enough. So I don't think I thought a lot about hot authors. Mm-hmm. But looking back at writers whose work I either love or deeply enjoy, and I also think are very hot, I came up with three. The first one is very obvious. People are going to make fun of me. But Jack Kerouac is such a babe. That man was gorgeous. Oh my god. 100%. Honestly.
Yes.
It should not be allowed. So that's my number one. Okay. My number two is a Brazilian writer and singer called Chico Buarque, who is 100% a babe. Just gorgeous. Yes. Beautiful, beautiful man. Gorgeous baby blue eyes.
Ooh.
Brilliant writer, brilliant musician. Yeah. Has a book called Budapest that, if you're so inclined to read, I greatly recommend. And the third one is Isabel Allende, the Chilean writer.
Oh, yes.
Who wrote The House of the Spirits and City of the Beasts. Yeah. Who's just brilliant. Wonderful woman. Yes. She was so chic. Gorgeous hair. Just a presence.
She's so glamorous.
Super glamorous. She's giving old Hollywood glamour. Beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so what is the order for those? I know that's going to be really hard to choose, but who are you going to fuck? Who are you going to marry? And who are you going to kill?
I don't think that's so hard for me, surprisingly enough.
Okay.
I think I will kill our beloved Jack Kerouac because I don't think we want that in our lives. I think we need to be healthy. It is 2023. That boy drank a lot, was involved in murder, and he's American. We don't need it.
The greatest crime of all.
The greatest crime of all. How could he?
I am with you. Let's go. That's a great choice.
gone with Jack. No. I would take to bed my beautiful Chico, who's gorgeous.
Love it.
A piece, but a bit of a womanizer. So let's have a bit of pleasure and let it go.
Yeah.
And then I would marry Isabel. I think we would have a beautiful life. A quaint life. I read once that she only starts new books on the 8th of January. So the other 364 days, it's so chic. She cannot start work. I wish I could do that. That's my dream. Yeah. To tell people I only start new work this day.
She is so cool.
Yeah, I feel like we would vibe, we would have a beautiful life together in our little house. And that would
be like your
great.
House would be so well decorated.
Oh my God, it would be. I have to say, it would be gorgeous. Yes. So, shades of like olive green. Olive green's hot.
I'm getting horny now. Yeah.
Want me too. Just thinking about it. The dullest color. Oh my God.
Oh God. Ooh, thinking about your wainscoting. I'm like,
Oh, no, I can smell it. I can smell it now. Yes. That's it. That's my life.
That's beautiful.
I'm curious about yours now.
Okay, so I had a hard time. I kept going back and forth on one of the spots, but I landed on, so the one that I had to get rid of, pardon me, I was going to include James Joyce because obviously he'd be a great choice for Fugg. Pardon me. Anyway, great choice for Fugg, based on his love letters with Nora. I am someone who is sometimes a bit gassy because I drink a lot of seltzer. So the idea that he loved huffing up her farts is a real comfort to me. but I had to cut out Joyce, and I landed on Marguerite Duras, Edward Said, and Anton Chekhov. So I think that I would have to go with Fuck Duras. She's very sensual. I love how she writes about sex in her books. She's always got these neat little lesbian love scenes where they're like, I cupped her little grapefruit breast. And I'm like, let's go.
Yeah, I do think I have a grapefruit breast.
Yeah, right. Yeah, mine are getting closer to like cantaloupes, but like, you know, she can make do. But she's always got like sensual French ladies having sex with each other. So I love that. I think I'd have to marry Said because I love his memoir, Out of Place. And he seems so romantic. He had a pretty, you know, nice, steady life working at Columbia. He had a good job. He liked to listen to classical music. We'd put on records at night. I think we'd have a nice, cozy little marriage. And so, unfortunately, that means I'd have to kill Chekhov. But I will stipulate that it would be a mercy killing when he was in the late stages of TB.
Well, I think you are correct. I don't think we want to be bringing Chekhov too deeply into our lives. We don't want to be bringing any of those Russians or people from that era, like Tolstoy. They don't seem like they would be good for us.
Yeah, I mean, and Chekhov was a notorious cheater, so he's got to go.
Can't be dealing with that. Cannot be dealing with that.
Do not need this in my life. Oh my gosh. Well, that was a great round of Fuck, Marry, Kill. And oh my God, Rafa, this was so much fun. Thank you so much for coming on.
Oh man, this was great. I'm going to be a bit sad when I listen to new episodes and they're not with me. Because I'm going to think of all the things we could be talking about.
You've got to come back.
You know, as you know now, I do have an endless list of people who I think are hot. So...
Well, you will be hearing from us because we want to dig deeper into this list and we definitely want to dig into Alfred Molina. So
this, if you do an Alfred Molina episode and it's not with me, I will be deeply hurt. I would be crying. I would not talk to you ever again.
I swear to you, listen, on Emma Thompson's life, we will not do Alfred Molina without you.
Hell yeah. This is what I was born to do. The Alfred Molina episode.
Well, Rafa, for people that want to follow you, where can they find you on social media? And do you have anything coming up that people should look out for?
Well, you can find me on social media at Rafius. So it's Rafius pretty much everywhere. I've started a Threads. I've started a Blue Sky. I've started a Gray Sky. I've started everything else you can find. And coming up, so I program the Edinburgh Film Festival. So if you're in the UK by any chance, it is between the 18th and the 23rd of August. And we have a beautiful selection of beautiful films with beautiful people. So if you think everyone is hot, you will find much hotness within our festival.
Oh my God, what a great sell. Jeez. Well, this was delightful. Thank you so much for coming. You will be back. I cannot wait. It's going to be so fun. And in the meantime, listeners, if you you can find us anywhere you get your podcasts. If you go onto Apple Podcasts, though, You can rate us 5 stars and leave us a little review, and we'd very much appreciate it. So thank you very much. You can also follow us on social media. We're on Instagram and Twitter. We have yet to get on Threads, but we are on those platforms now at Everyone Is Hot Pod. That's one as in numeral one, not O-N-E. Everyone Is Hot Pod. And in the meantime, until we meet again, please stay horny.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.